Morning. A couple of housekeeping things. Tonight we've got a Devo at the Gibsons, actually on Proverbs, which is what I'm preaching on this morning. So any junior high school, college age person is welcome to that tonight after evening service. Also, since it's the last Sunday of the month, we reserve something special for every Sunday night that is the last Sunday of the night of the month. So I'm not preaching tonight. We're going to be doing actually a prayer or a song service that Steve Lorenz has organized. Normally we would do a prayer service, but we did that a couple weeks ago. So we're going to be doing a song service tonight. So we'll be looking forward to that. From time to time, since I've been here, we've looked at various themes in the book of Proverbs. We've looked at anger, friendship, words, and laziness. There are different concepts that are kind of strung together in the book of Proverbs. Beginning in Proverbs chapter 10, you've got all of these seemingly random passages where you get one topic, then another one, and it's almost like every chapter in the book of Proverbs is like a multivitamin, where it tells you a little bit about anger, or it tells you a little bit about friendship, and it tells you a little bit about pride, and then as you read the whole chapter, it's like you've had a little multivitamin, and then you get to the next chapter and you have another one, and it helps you grow as a person. Of course, Solomon wrote the book of Proverbs, and the question that we have to ask is, how did he get the wisdom that he has? Well, we know from 1 Kings chapter 3, verse 9, that he prayed for it, and he said this in his prayer. He says, "Give your servant, therefore, an understanding mind to govern your people, that I may discern between good and evil, for who is able to govern this your great people?" When he describes in this prayer what he wants from God, he wants, first of all, an understanding mind. And then he also explains that it's being able to be discerning. Wisdom is understanding how to take daily situations and make the right decisions. Wisdom is the ability to discern in various different kinds of scenarios that come up in my life what the best decision to make is. And there's various different topics that are dealt with in the book of Proverbs. Today I want to look at pride and humility. The book of Proverbs would teach us that if we want to be people who are wise, we have to be humble. And in fact, pride and wisdom cannot coexist at the same time. So the person who's wise is the person who's growing in humility, but there are various things that we can understand them best perhaps better when we understand what the opposite is. And the opposite of humility is, of course, pride. And so in this lesson, I want us to consider what Proverbs says about pride and how this can help us become wise people. The first thing that Proverbs would help us see are the signs of pride. Another way to say that is how we diagnose it in our life. If we want to find out if we're prideful, what kinds of symptoms would we have in our life? The first one would be self-exaltation. In Proverbs chapter 21, verse 4, it says, "Haughty eyes and a proud heart, the lamp of the wicked are sin." In this text, it talks about a lamp of the wicked. Now, if you were in the ancient days before they had electricity and everything like that, you'd have a lamp in your house, and that would be the thing that would guide you around your house at nighttime. If you were taking a walk at nighttime, you'd need a lamp, and that would be the thing that would help guide you. So when Solomon writes this, he's explaining that the lamp of the wicked person, in other words, the bottom line of the wicked person, the guiding principle of the wicked person, is haughty eyes. Now, what is haughty eyes? The idea of that concept is to bring up or to exalt or to promote. It's a strong desire to be better than other things or other people. It's a strong desire to be a person of consequence and be weightier than everything else around you. Now, there's a couple of different ways that would apply. The first one would be exalting ourselves above other people. The prideful person takes pleasure in comparing themselves to other people and finding themselves to be better than other people. Now, this doesn't mean that as Christians we shouldn't at times compare ourselves to each other to be encouraged to do better. That's not the idea. Paul would say, "Imitate me as I imitate Christ." He's saying, compare yourself to me and strive to do better as I'm doing in the Lord. That's not the kind of comparison that we're talking about here. The kind of comparison we're talking about here is finding people that you think you're better than and then getting pleasure over the fact that you've, in some way or another, exalted yourself above that person in your mind. And by the way, this teaches us something interesting about pride. When we have pride, we never rejoice in what we actually have. We just rejoice that we have better things than other people. So, for example, if I take pride over the money that I have, or the good looks that I have, or the talents that I have, I'm not rejoicing over the things that I have themselves. I'm rejoicing over the fact that I have more or better than you do. And we see that, by the way, with Jesus. When Jesus was crucified, the religious leaders of the day, they had power, they had prominence, and they rejoiced in that, but here came somebody that was better than them in their power and in their knowledge, and how did those people react? They crucified Jesus. This means that the prideful person views life as a competition. They're always trying to find in some way or another how they're better than somebody else to make themselves feel better about themselves in that way. But the other way that this would apply is to exalt ourselves above God. Ultimately, what pride does is it causes us to look at what God says, who is the supreme being of the world, and to conclude to ourselves that I don't need to listen to what he says about X, Y, or Z because I'm wiser, I know better what I ought to do in my life. And so the conclusion that we reach from that is that when I am somebody who keeps casting off the restraints of God, and I keep looking at what God says and I keep finding some ways to justify how it doesn't apply to my life, I'm exalting myself above what God actually says. By the way, we see that in the Garden of Eden. When Eve looks at the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, it says that she saw that the tree was good for food. In Genesis chapters 1 and 2, whose business was it to determine what was good? It was God. Every time he spoke something into creation, it was good, it was good, it was good, and then at the end of it, it was very good when everything was completed. But then here came Eve, and she determined what was going to be good for herself, not using God's wisdom, and that's an act of pride because she's exalting herself above the wisdom of God. Now, what we see going on with that first sign of pride leads us into the second sign of pride, which is strife. If the bottom line of my life, if the guiding principle of my life is my exaltation and my honor, what that's going to cause me to do is it's going to cause me to fight and quarrel with people. Proverbs 13:10 says, "Arrogance leads to nothing but strife, but wisdom is gained by those who take advice." This creates an interesting picture of the prideful heart. Have you ever been around somebody who is really touchy? Like, you could be talking about something that has no relation to something that they're about to be offended about. You could be talking about the weather. And then suddenly their countenance changes, and you find out that they got offended by something that you said. Well, why is it that that happens? Because the guiding principle of my life is me and my honor, and if anybody says anything that somehow in my mind steps on that, then I'm going to start to fight you about that. Look at the second part of this verse, though. It says, "Wisdom is gained by those who take advice." This helps us understand when this strife sometimes takes place. Have you ever seen somebody try to give advice to somebody else, and then it creates a little bit of strife or a fight? Whenever I go to Starbucks, I go there a lot, obviously, and I get to see the baristas get trained. And when the new barista, somebody newly gets hired, like, they're not ashamed to say that they're a trainee. And they're not ashamed to be getting instructions on how to use the cash register and how to make the drinks better. But imagine that you've been working at Starbucks for 4 years. Or 5 years, and somebody says, "Hey, you should think about maybe doing this a little bit differently." How are they going to respond? A little bit differently than the trainee mentality. And so when you try to instruct somebody in that position, then they start to get touchy and they start to get upset, and no longer is the discussion about how I can make a better drink. Instead, it's become personal. You ever seen that happen before? Where you've got two people talking about how to do some project or how to do something better. And then the person that's getting instructed suddenly gets really upset about it. The reason is not because they're, to the person that gets upset, they're not talking about how to do better with X, Y, or Z. What they're talking about to that person's mind is my honor and my integrity, so I'm going to fight you nail and tooth to defend it. And so that's how pride works in that way. But all of this boils down to self-focus. The thing that both of the signs of pride have in common is that it's self-obsession or self-focus. Here's one way to think about it. Our body parts don't bring attention to themselves unless there's something wrong with them. When was the last time you commented to somebody about how well your kneecaps are doing at protecting your knees? Like somebody says to you, how are you doing today? Man, my kneecaps are just doing awesome. My elbow is working great today. My neck is... Like, we don't do that unless we recently had surgery and we were anticipating it to get better. When we have some kind of inflammatory problem or something like that, we bring attention to the body part that's hurting. Do you know what we do with ourselves every day? We're constantly bringing attention to ourselves. Every single conversation revolves around us. If somebody could get in a car accident and you could stop on the side of the road and go to the person that's bleeding and say, yeah, I had a car accident too. Do you want me to tell you about that? Everything just revolves around you. That's the biblical picture of pride, which helps us understand something. When I first became a Christian, my conception of pride was to think low of myself. When I would hear people define what pride was, it basically in my mind boiled down to self-abasement. And so what I started doing when I was a newer Christian is I'd say, okay, well, I'm going to start being prideful. And I'd say, Eric, you're a loser, you're a failure, you're a moron, you're all of these kinds of things. And I would start thinking, yes, I'm finally being prideful or humble. That's not humility. But a lot of people have this picture that that's what humility is. The bottom line of pride is to be self-focused, which means that there's two different ways that people can be prideful. The first person and the most obvious way that you can be prideful is to think that you're awesome and better than everybody else. But do you know what the other side of the coin is? It's to constantly talk negative of yourself and constantly be self-obsessive in that way. Try to think about why that's the case. If I'm always being negative towards myself and I'm always down-talking myself and that's kind of the way that I'm living, do you know why I'm doing that? It's because I still have a desire to be better than other people. But the only thing I've done is I've found people who are better than me, and so I'm constantly depressed about it. And I'm constantly upset about it. The person who thinks highly of themselves has simply found people that they think they're better than, and so they feel puffed up in that way. So pride is a coin, and there's two sides of the same coin. Thinking high of yourself or constantly self-abasement. Which means that biblical humility means that I don't draw attention to myself. That's the picture of it. Now, does it mean that I can't ever draw attention to myself? If somebody asks me how my day is going, I can't answer that question. No, that's not the idea. The idea is, what's the focus of my life? Am I self-focused or am I God and others focused? And that's what you determine whether or not somebody's prideful or humble. So those are the signs of pride. What about the consequences of pride? Proverbs doesn't just tell us what the signs or the symptoms of pride are, it also explains what the consequences of it are. There are several passages in Proverbs that show God's stance towards the prideful. Proverbs 6, 16, and 17 say there are six things that the Lord hates, seven that are an abomination to him, and the first one are haughty eyes. Haughty eyes. And he goes on to list six other things. But it says that the Lord hates haughty eyes, people who are self-exalting. What about this passage, Proverbs 16:5? Everyone who is arrogant in heart is an abomination to the Lord. Be assured he will not go unpunished. What these proverbs are showing us is that if we want to be people who are haughty and arrogant and prideful in those ways, we're setting ourselves up against the creator of the universe. Do you suppose there's going to be consequences for that? God created the world in such a way that if you violate his laws, there are consequences for it. So what are the consequences of pride? The first one is that you never learn. The prideful person might learn facts. They might grow in some of those ways as they go to college or whatever. But they're not learning in the sense that they're never leading to life change. Proverbs 26, verse 12 says, "Do you see a man who is wise in his own eyes? There is more hope for a fool than for him." You get this picture of Solomon instructing his kids. He's saying, "Hey, do you see that guy over there? That guy that thinks he's wise in his own eyes? Did you know that there's more hope for a guy that's foolish than for that guy?" When you ask the question, why? And it's because he's not able to be instructed. Nobody's able to teach that person anything, and it connects with Proverbs 28, verse 26. "Whoever trusts in his own mind is a fool, but he who walks in wisdom will be delivered." Try to think about, maybe this is a good way to illustrate this. If God created the world in such a way where there's consequences for breaking his laws, connect that to gravity. Imagine that you've got somebody that says, "I think the law of gravity is too narrow-minded and it's too restrictive. So, law of gravity, this is what I'm going to show you. I'm going to train myself to jump off a 40-story building." And so you start to practice and you decide that you're going to start out by jumping off two stories to just start with your training. The first, you break your ankle. And after you recover, after so many weeks of recovery, you decide, okay, that was just bad luck. I'm going to try five stories this time. Then you break your femur. Third time you go, okay, I'm going to try six stories and we'll see if I can start climbing up to the 40. I know the first couple times didn't work out so well. You break your wrist or something worse. You know how this looks in real life? The prideful person who cannot be instructed looks like this. It's the person who keeps seeking fulfillment in relationships. And so they connect their heart to this person and they let them down, so they think to themselves, this person will be the answer. And then they put all of their eggs in that basket, but then the basket breaks and all the eggs with it. And you get depressed and upset again. And then you think, well, maybe this person will be the answer. Or it's the person that says, I want to find fulfillment and I want to find true life. And I know what God says about it, but I'm going to cast off what he says about it. So I'm going to seek it in X, Y, or Z, and it doesn't work. So you jump from one thing to another to another. That's the same person that's trying to defy gravity. God created the world in such a way where we find fulfillment in him. And some people want to keep breaking those laws over and over again, and it doesn't work. And you're not learning. Look what this passage says, though. The person who walks in wisdom will be delivered. Because they're learning. Because they're growing. They're learning from their mistakes. That's the first consequence of pride, though, is that they never learn. The second one and the third one flow from this. The second consequence of pride is disgrace. Proverbs 11:2. "When pride comes, then comes disgrace, but with the humble is wisdom." This is giving a sequence of events. You've got the person who's prideful, and what's around the corner? It's going to be disgrace. There's some good biblical examples of this, by the way. Haman, in the book of Esther, he demanded that people would bow down to him. Does that sound like people today ever? Does that sound like us ever? We demand people bow down to us and respect us and honor us. And when Mordecai the Jew wouldn't bow down to Haman, he creates this giant gallows for him to be hung on. And what happens later on in the book of Esther? Haman himself is the one that hangs on it. He was prideful, and then there came disgrace. What about the Tower of Babel? These people are trying to build this giant tower up to the heavens, and in Genesis, it says that God had to come down to it. What man was exalting and thought was awesome, God had to go, oh, what's going on down there? Okay, I better check that out. And then he confuses the languages. And so they get disgraced in that way. Have you ever seen this happen before, though? You've got the prideful person who's so self-centered and so egotistical that they're just demanding honor and they're just demanding all of this stuff, and sooner or later they start saying things that they regret in their pursuit of that. To the extent where people start looking at the person and going, I don't really know what you're wanting, but you're not getting any honor from me because of the way that you're acting. If you've got pride, disgrace is right around the corner. But the third thing, the third consequence of pride, is destruction. Proverbs deals a lot with the earthly consequences of sin. This third consequence deals with the earthly consequences and the eternal ones. Look at Proverbs chapter 16, verse 18. Pride goes before destruction and a haughty spirit before a fall. Again, you get this picture of like a parade. You ever seen a parade before where there's like floats one after another? The first float is pride and the second float is destruction. Like that's the picture in this. Think about how this works though. Proverbs 3:34 says, toward the scorners he is scornful, but to the humble he gives favor. The New Testament quotes that passage twice, and it replaces the word scorner with prideful. And so it's the same concept there. But in what ways would somebody who is prideful be destroyed? In what ways would God be scornful towards those who are prideful? The first one would be physical consequences. You ever known anybody who physically died because of their pride? I saw on Facebook this last week, there was, I don't know if the whole thing was a joke or if part of it was a joke because of what people did to it, but there's like this giant sign next to the road that said, this year thousands of men will die from stubbornness. And then below that, somebody spray painted in, no, we won't. Like that kind of sums it up in some ways. The person who thinks that they can keep living however they want to live, they can keep doing the drugs that they're doing, they can keep living promiscuously the way that they think that they can, and then eventually something happens where their life is just destroyed, or they physically die. But spiritually, destruction would happen too. The Bible teaches, and it says this in many different places, it's a theme in the Bible, that God humbles the prideful but exalts the humble. And one day there will be a final day when God will take all of the people who were self-exalting and not growing in humility. And I know that none of us are perfect in this, but if we're not growing towards humility, and that's not something that we're striving for, there will come a day where every knee will bow and every tongue will have to confess and realize that there's something weightier out there than you that you should have been obeying. Now, does that sound too mean of God to do that? The truth is, the person who's growing in humility is somebody who really believes in the gospel. Because the gospel teaches that we have a God who left the glories of heaven, came to earth, and as he was on the earth, he was focused on obeying the Father and focused on saving that which was lost. And the more and more the gospel comes into me, the more and more humble I will become. The person who remains prideful doesn't understand the gospel. So then we're left with a problem. How do we humble our pride? Like, how do we grow in this? And one of the things that might be frustrating for some people when you read the book of Proverbs is that it doesn't give you like 3 or 4 steps to attain it. If you go to Barnes & Noble or any bookstore around here, they're going to give you like 10 steps to success or 3 steps to overcoming X, Y, or Z. Have you ever noticed that the Bible's not like that? Life change doesn't happen that way, through mechanical procedures. Life change happens, like Galatians 5 would kind of explain, when it describes the fruit of the Spirit. Love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, self-control, gentleness. Character changes like fruit grows. And you can't boil that down to a couple steps. It's an organic thing. But there's some pointers that Proverbs gives us in order to humble our pride. Here's the first one. Watch your tongue. Proverbs 30, verse 32. If you have been foolish, exalting yourself, or if you have been devising evil, put your hand on your mouth. You know what this is saying? If all of your conversations are boiling down to you, or boiling down to finding fault in other people to make yourself feel exalted, Proverbs is saying, put your hand over your mouth. Stop talking like that. Quit it. That's one step, but we know that, sorry, I just said we don't use steps, but that's one thing that Proverbs says about that. Internal contradiction. but it says here, put your hand over your mouth. We know, though, that our words come from the heart. So it's not enough to simply restrain what we say, though that's one thing to say about it. So what has to get into our hearts for us to be people who are focused more on God and others than ourselves? Here's one thing. Value humility. Proverbs 16:19, it is better to be lowly, to be of a lowly spirit with the poor than to divide the spoil with the proud. This is interesting. There are several passages in Proverbs that say, that gives two scenarios, and they say one is better than the other. In one of these scenarios here, you've got like a people who are dividing the spoil. Like they've got a ton of gold, they've got a ton of good food, and they're all happy about that. And then the other person is lowly, and they obviously don't have as much physically, and they're with lowly people. Which one is better? It's better to be lowly of spirit with lowly people than to have all of the riches in the world. This proverb is saying that humility is more valuable than all of the gold and silver that's buried underneath the earth. Did you know that there's a lot of people, though, that they can become, they can get a lot of spoil in this earth by being prideful? We never see that in the elections, do we? Self-exaltation, 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 then I get all of these things. What's better? Maybe if you're in business, you won't make as much money, but money's not the bottom line. Serving God is the bottom line. Maybe if you've got friends, you won't be able to get as much honor from them, but honor's not the bottom line. The bottom line is serving God and being lowly of spirit. Third thing that we see, though, in Proverbs, to humble our pride is to fear God. Proverbs 15:33, the fear of the Lord is instruction in wisdom, and humility comes before honor. When the Bible speaks about the fear of the Lord, what does that mean? There's a couple different ways to take that, and I think there's at least two ways that are solid and true. The first one would be, should I fear God if I'm living in sin and the consequences of that sin? If I keep disrespecting Samantha over and over and over and over and over again, should I be afraid of how she might treat me? If I was wise, yeah, that would be the case. If I keep sinning against God and I keep lifting up and exalting myself, should I be afraid of what God might do to me? Yeah. There's that sense, in that sense, we should fear God. But there's another sense in which we should fear God, and that means to revere or honor or deeply respect Him. And notice that the people who fear God, they get instruction. The prideful person never takes instruction. They're never learning. They're never growing. Anything you say to them won't do anything in their life. But the humble person who fears God, they're taking instruction in and it's changing their life. And it says that this person is going to get honor. In what sense does the humble receive honor? In two ways. Who are the people in this world that you respect and honor? Are they people who are self-centered and are all about themselves? Those are not the people that you honor. Those are not the people you go to for advice. Those are not the people that you trust. What kind of people do you honor? Ones that you know care about you. Ones that you know love you. Ones that you know have your best interest at heart. Those are the ones you honor. So not only would the honor be in this life, it would be in the next life. Where one day we will be transformed to be like Christ in 1 John chapter 3. And we'll have eternal honor and glory with God. So then the question is, okay, well, I really want that. So how do I fear God? How do I do that? When we read the Bible to see God's character. Sometimes we can read the Bible to try to fight false doctrine. And we got to do that sometimes. Sometimes we can read the Bible just to get answers to Bible class material. And we got to do that. But let's not forget that when we're reading the Scripture is a means to an end for us to see the greatness of God. And the more and more we see God through the Scriptures, the more and more we're going to honor and revere Him. We also learn to fear God the more that we think about the sacrifice that He made. The Apostle Paul wrote this in Galatians 6:14, "But far be it from me to boast except in the cross of our Lord Jesus Christ, by which the world has been crucified to me and I to the world." Paul says, my boast is not in my education. Was he highly educated? Yes. My boast is not how many people I've baptized. Has he baptized a lot of people? Yeah. My boast is not in how much I know about the scripture. Did the guy know? Yeah. All that kind of stuff. My boast, the thing that I glory in, is the cross of Jesus. Why? Because he continually knew in his heart that first of all, he was a sinner that didn't deserve anything. And secondly, that God, by his grace and his wisdom, gave him everything he has. So what right did he have to be self-centered and self-focused? I like what 1 Corinthians 4:7, this is just a good question that Paul wrote in 1 Corinthians 4:7. What do you have that you did not receive? By the way, what's the answer to that question? What do you have that you didn't receive? Well, yeah, but I worked really hard and that's why I have the house I have and that's why, yeah, but did you decide that you were born in this country? Did you decide the economic conditions in which you were born? Yeah, but I've studied a lot and that's why I know so much. Who gave you your brain? Who gave it to you? Who orchestrated the circumstances in your life for you to be where you're at right now? Maybe you've worked some, but God's the one that gave you all the material that you started with, that you started to cultivate with. What do you have that you did not receive? If you received it, why do you boast as if you did not receive it? That's a good question. Has this sunk into our hearts? And are we being, as the book of Proverbs would show to us, wise people as we're growing in our humility? True life does not come from me being self-centered and wanting everything to revolve around me. True life comes from focusing on God and focusing on others. If there's anything that we can do for you this morning, this is an opportunity for you to humble yourself. This is an area that all of us can grow in. If there's anything that we can do for you, please come forward while we stand and while we sing.